Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. How to reboot after disappointment at work. We can bounce back better from a disappointment if we pay more attention to our internal dialogue, by Julian C. Miravel and Julie Allison, February 6, 2024. All of us have experienced disappointment, sadness, setbacks at work. A few years ago, Julian served as an academic leader at a regional university for 3 years. He gave his full heart and soul to the role. He was on a mission to do good. At the same time, the university was undergoing a budget crisis that culminated with the global pandemic. The university had no choice but to restructure, and when it did, Julian lost his role and returned to the faculty. In the crucible of organizational change, Julian hit a crossroads after dedicating 15 years to building an impactful organizational development team at a prominent health system. Devoted to fostering growth for her team, employees, and patients, she was struck by a harsh reality when financial constraints led to the restructuring and outsourcing of leadership development and learning initiatives. She lost her job. You might experience disappointment at work in many ways. A long-term project does not come to fruition. A new position opens up and you don't get it, or your hard work does not pay off. Faced with a sense of loss and disappointment, we have no choice but to respond. In his famous work, Man's Search for Meaning, psychiatrist Viktor Frankl wrote that every person is questioned by life and can only answer to life by being responsible. In each of us, he proposed, we have a responsibility or the ability to respond. Whether you are a leader who lost a job or an opportunity, an entrepreneur starting a new business, or simply facing a personal challenge, your ability to respond and how likely you are to bounce back is partly shaped by the way you talk and with and to yourself. Below, we share 3 easy-to-use strategies for positive self-talk. We invite you to pay attention to your typical thought patterns, learn to catch and respond to negative thoughts, and reboot after disappointment. Number 1, use positive affirmations. A first strategy is to short-circuit your negative thoughts by using positive self-affirmations. Positive self-affirmations include any phrase that reminds you of who you are as a person and serve as an encouragement to stay resilient in the face of adversity. I am enough, I believe in my dreams, or I have the capacity to overcome this moment are all examples of positive affirmations. According to researchers, self-affirmations serve a number of important functions. Self-affirmations boost confidence, broaden our perspective, decrease the impact a negative event will have on you, and promote an optimistic outlook. Researchers David K. Sherman and Kimberly A. Hartson explain that self-affirmation resolves the tension between self-protection and self-improvement. In other words, effective, positive self-affirmations will help you accept the reality of your situation and address it with assertiveness and flexibility, giving you the courage to try new things. Julie's recent encounter with a young entrepreneur underscored the transformative power of gaining a different perspective, particularly when caught in the clutches of self-doubt and uncertainty. During a coaching session addressing the entrepreneur's concerns about the future, Julie asked, "If you had a friend facing a similar situation, what advice would you offer them?" The response, a profound realization, emphasized the importance of being gentle toward the self. "I would say, give yourself some grace." By offering ourselves the same kindness and understanding we readily provide to others, we create space for growth. Acknowledging that progress may unfold gradually, you can short-circuit your negative thoughts right in their tracks. "I am granting myself some grace today. I am in the process of learning." This shift in perspective can encourage your resilience, your openness to possibilities, and a compassionate approach to your own journey. In the popular Netflix show Sex Education, one of the main characters, Michael Groff, has much to teach us about rebooting from disappointment. After serving for years as the headmaster of a school, he gets fired and deserves it. His wife also leaves him because he has been ignoring her for years. He goes through a difficult time, but begins to piece his life together again with the help of a therapist. At the opening of season 4, Michael Groff walks into a new school as a substitute teacher. He stops for a moment in the hallway, takes a piece of paper out of his pocket, and reads it to himself. "I am here. I am enough. I am learning to be a better person." 2. Reframe your mindset and accept reality. As Julian transitioned after his job loss, he took some time to reflect about the past and the future, and to squeeze some learning from the experience. During this time, he would talk to his father over the phone, who reminded him to look at the situation differently. His father said, "Look at this opportunity you have been given. This is a gift. You have the opportunity to focus on your real strengths and to invest time and energy in writing, research, teaching, and speaking, all the things that you love to do." Gradually, the phrase resonated with Julian and became a source of inner strength. "This moment is a gift, and I can use it to do what I love." As we move past disappointment, it's not uncommon to explore uncharted territories. This endeavor comes with its own entourage of fear and doubt. In the face of our fears, it can be helpful to look at the situation from a different perspective, to change the meaning we give to what's happening. In Julie's coaching practice, there was a young entrepreneur who was on the cusp of a necessary pivot, grappling with the impending change. Julie asked, "What is holding you back?" The answer was safety. In the session, Julie encouraged her client, embrace the trembling uncertainty because, let's face it, you're already trembling. She said, you are right where you're supposed to be. Let that be your sassy mantra as you navigate the thrilling terrain of the unknown. Life's an adventure, and you're the audacious protagonist. Scared, but oh so ready for the plot twist. Do it scared. You're already scared anyway, she quipped. She challenged them to confront the fear head on and acknowledge that, yes, it's terrifying, but it's also a crucial step toward unleashing their genius. You are right where you're supposed to be, became a mantra, a rallying cry against the inertia of fear for that entrepreneur. For many of us, embracing the unknown isn't just a suggestion. It's a declaration of intent, an audacious move toward our full potential. This can be a helpful way for all of us to reframe our mindset whenever we face the unknown. 3. Ask big questions. Most disappointments are triggered by our failed expectations. We imagine certain results, goals, and plans, and clearly expect to meet them. We have expectations about people and situations too. When those expectations aren't met, disappointment arises. In his Meditations, Thich Nhat Hanh says, every time sadness or anger or disappointment surface, you have the capacity to deal with it. Because your anger, your disappointment is part of you, don't fight against it. Instead, he advocates, return to the breath. Once you are there, ask yourself and others big questions to reboot and begin the path of self-recovery. Part of the gift that Julian's father was referencing is the opportunity to reconsider what's important, to rediscover our real strengths, and to perhaps choose a path that would be more fitting or joyful. In other words, a personal transformation. As research by Jack Mesereau and others finds, when self-transformation occurs, we adopt a new definition of self, a new passion for life, and a greater sense of power and freedom. That process can be initiated by communication within the self, which we can trigger with meaningful questions like these. What are you dreaming about now? What are your core strengths? And how do you want to use them this time? What do you want out of your career or personal life? What gives you joy? What do you do when you feel at your best? What are some things that you are doing when other people see you at your best? What will you do to respond productively? Right inside the word question is the word quest. When you begin the process of inquiry, you will begin the quest to respond. Disappointment and major setbacks are a natural part of any professional career. How you respond to setbacks is what makes the difference. Consider these phrases for managing your inner voice. I am granting myself some grace today. I am in the process of learning. I am here. I am enough. I am learning to be a better person. Do it sacred. You're already, I'm sorry, do it scared. You're already scared anyway. You are right when you're supposed to be. This moment is a gift, and I can use it to do what I love. Return to the breath. What will I do to respond? Remember, there is no timeline for recovering and rebooting from disappointment. Early in the process, neither of us could see losing our leadership role as a gift. It was simply too painful. Before you start to focus on the positives and opportunities, you can be kind to yourself by simply allowing yourself to feel the disappointment, shock, or loss itself. As you reboot from your own disappointment, we hope that you find inspiration to grant yourself some grace, embrace the learning process, confront your fears, and acknowledge the transformative potential in every moment. Positive thought, talk, can be your catalyst for change. About the authors, Julian C. Miravel, Ph.D., is professor of applied communication at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, an author, and a professional speaker. His mission is to inspire people of all walks of life to communicate more positively at work and at home. To learn more, visit Julian Miravel, JulienMiravel.com. Julie Allison, a seasoned executive, learning and development leader with 2 decades of experience, currently serves as the executive director at Arkansas Fellowship, shaping strategic visions and mentoring emerging business leaders. As the CEO of JKA Consulting, LLC, she specializes in leadership and executive coaching, emphasizing individual potential and aligning strengths with diverse industry goals. You're listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. What's wrong with too much self-control? Self-control isn't always a good thing. Being over-controlled can be bad for your mental health. By Alex Lambert, February 2, 2024. Having high self-control is often seen as a good thing. It's believed to be the key to success in many aspects of life, whether that's getting a promotion at work, sticking to your workout regime, or resisting the temptation of a sweet treat when you're watching what you eat. But as suggested by a theory published by Professor Thomas Lynch in 2018, high self-control may not always be a good thing, and for some, it could be linked to certain mental health problems. According to Lynch's theory, every single one of us leans more toward one of 2 personality styles, under control or over control. The way we tend to lean depends on many factors, including our genes, the behavior that people around us reward and discourage, our life experiences, and the coping strategies we use every day. Importantly, being under-controlled or over-controlled is neither good nor bad. While it makes us more likely to behave in a certain way, most of us are psychologically flexible and can adapt to the different situations we're put in. So, regardless of whether we're over-controlled or under-controlled, This flexibility helps us deal with life's challenges and setbacks in a constructive way. But both under control and over control can become problematic. This usually happens when a combination of biological, social, and personal factors make us much less flexible. Most of us are probably more familiar with what problematic under control looks like. People who are highly under controlled may have few inhibitions and struggle to control their emotions. Their behavior may be unpredictable, as it's often dependent on the mood that they're in. This can negatively affect their relationships, education, work, finances, and health. There are many therapies out there that can help under-controlled people. These therapies help them to learn to regulate emotions and increase self-control. For example, cognitive behavioral therapy aims to teach people to teach people control over their thoughts, behavior, and emotions. Similarly, dialectical behavior therapy, designed for people who experience emotions very intensely, targets emotion dysregulation. Problematic overcontrol. Unfortunately, overcontrol isn't talked about as much. This may be because overcontrolled traits, such as persistence, the ability to make plans and stick to them, striving for perfection, and being in control of emotions, are often highly regarded in our society. But when over-control becomes an issue, it can be damaging in many areas of life. Highly over-controlled people may struggle to adapt to change. They may be less open to new experiences and criticism, and be very set in their ways. They may experience bitter feelings of envy toward others and struggle to relax and have fun in social situations. They may also use fewer gestures, rarely smile or cry, and try to hide their emotions at any cost. Together, these characteristics may make a person more likely to experience social isolation and loneliness. This may ultimately cause their mental health to worsen. Unfortunately, many of the available psychological therapies aren't helpful in treating issues of overcontrol. This is because they focus on improving self-control and emotion regulation. But since overcontrolled people already control and regulate too much, they instead need a therapy that can help them learn that sometimes it's okay to relax and let go. Alongside this theory, Lynch also developed a therapy designed to treat issues of over-control, known as radically open dialectical behavior therapy. Early studies have shown that the therapy has a lot of potential in helping over-controlled people. It does this by teaching them how to let go of the need to always be in control, be more open about their emotions, better communicate with people, and be more flexible in the midst of changing situations. Importantly, this therapy is trans-diagnostic, which means it can be helpful regardless of what mental health condition a person might have been diagnosed with before. Research shows that it may be useful for people who struggle with a range of mental health conditions, such as treatment-resistant depression, anorexia nervosa, and autism spectrum disorders. But to receive suitable help, a person must first correctly be identified as highly over-controlled. The current assessment of over-control is quite long and complex. It involves a few questionnaires and an interview that must be conducted by a specially trained clinician. This can limit access to support and slow down research. I am working on developing a simplified assessment method that will help promptly identify problematic over-control. This will make it easier for researchers to continue studying over-control too. High self-control is typically admired, and highly over-controlled people are rarely open about their struggles. That's why problematic over-control can go unnoticed for a long time. Continued work in this field will hopefully make it easier for people to get the help that they need. Importantly, over-control and under-control are complex concepts and cannot be self-diagnosed. If you suspect you may be highly over-controlled or under-controlled, and especially if it's affecting your health and well-being, it's important to reach out to a doctor or a therapist. About the author. Alex Lambert is a PhD candidate and a graduate teaching assistant at Nottingham Trent University. Her interests lie in the area of personality psychopathology. The aim of her PhD program is to develop a new psychometric measure of maladaptive overcontrol. You have been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.